Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannon with you until 3 o'clock today. And we're still getting calls in after yesterday's show. We had a big reaction to our conversation yesterday. We spoke to people who had been adopted and who ended up having very upsetting conversations in the their local intro offices when they went to apply for their public services card, because their details were not held on the same register as everybody else's details. And the fact of their adoption was raised with them at a public counter, and this just led us to a wider conversation with adopted people about that sense of belonging that you know that they seek, and that something like this would cause such upset. So we are going to go to some more of those calls in a little while, and we've got an updated statement from the Department of Social Protection that I want to get back to. But first, something completely different, because the Ecological Transition Agency, which is a French environmental agency, has urged the French public to change underwear every day, but wear a T-shirt for up to 5 days and wear jeans for up to 30 days before you wash them. Because, of course, washing does have an impact on water pollution. Mary, good afternoon.
Yes, hello, yes.
What do you think of this, Mary? How often would you wash your jeans? We'll start with the jeans.
Well, I wear trousers, I'd say, right. I wear them for about a week. And I wear them before I wash them.
You'd get a good week out of them, would you?
Well, it depends. It actually depends. I'm retired now, so I wouldn't be working as such. I wouldn't have to change my clothes as often.
Yes. You know. So, do you know what? It occurs to me actually that everyone's attitude to clothes changed a little bit during COVID, when we all started, you know, more people working from home, and the need, that whole smart casual look that people had adopted forever. They kind of didn't bother with that anymore. And people were kind of going to their desk in their front room in their pyjamas. How often would you wash your pyjamas, Mary?
No, I wash my underwear regularly and all that. But I don't wash my bra every day. I wear my bra for about a week. But my other underwear, I wash every day, you know. I change every day, you know.
Well, actually, by the standards that this French agency were trying to encourage the French public, you're actually washing your bra too often, because they're saying you should wear your bra 7 times before you'd wash it. And sports and workout clothes would be worn 3 times before you'd need to put them in the wash. Now, that seems you could have some issues there with your sports and workout clothes, depending on how big a go you went at it in the gym. But in general, Mary, do you think we wash our clothes too often?
I do, but it depends on what a person does for a living. You say they're doing like heavy work, dirty work, well, they'd have to wash their clothes. You know, it depends what a person does, I think.
Yeah. But generally, do you think we've become kind of a nation of neat freaks, really, that we...
I think a little bit.
Do you?
I do.
Why do you say that, Mary?
Well, there's no need to wash all your clothes every day, you know. It's technically... Unless you, as I said, people are, it depends on people's job, you know. Like when I was working, I had to wear a uniform, so I had to look smart, you know.
Yes.
But when I'm not working anymore, I don't have to.
But I think a lot of people wash their clothes just out of habit, as in they'll just take it off and throw it in the laundry basket without even looking to see if it needs to be washed.
Well, I only wash if it needs to be washed.
And that wouldn't be for environmental concerns. That's just because you don't see the need for it, is it, Mary?
Yeah, exactly. There's no need if it's clean. No need to wash it.
There's the other thing as well, of course, because, you know, especially if you were growing up out in the country like I did, there was a kind of a general view that a bit of bacteria did nobody any harm, that a bit of dirt was actually good.
Well, I was brought up in the country. Yeah? I was in the country as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And wasn't...
I'm a bit old-fashioned, to be honest with you. I'm still old-fashioned, and I don't apologise for it.
But there was that view to let the children play in the dirt, basically, that it'll be good for them.
Well, it didn't do them any harm.
In terms of... what about, like, would you ever, like, this whole idea of wearing your pyjamas as day clothes and going from the bed to the, you know, would you have an issue with that?
No. Like,
no.
No, I wouldn't wear pyjamas out. And I only wear them, I don't wear pyjamas out. No, that's the other extreme now, no.
Or would you wear day clothes as pyjamas? How about that?
Well, I have done it a few times when I was tired. I got into the bed clothes and all, to be honest.
And did you get out and change your clothes, or?
Well, I didn't, because I had to go out on a message, and I just went out. I just tidied my hair up and went out and cleaned my teeth.
Which saved time as well as everything else, Mary.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you want to look at it that way.
The fact that there is a government agency now in France putting out, you know, trying to get the public to come on board with this. And I seem to remember even a couple of, was it last year or the year before, there was talk about some Hollywood stars saying that they didn't wash their children every day and there was like outrage over it. Are we going to see the pendulum swing back and people are going to be a bit more cool about?
Well, I think you have to wash yourself every day. That's one thing you won't get away with.
Would you go? Would you have? Because there are people who will say it's bad for you to wash yourself with soap every day.
Well, I don't shower every day now. I only shower every 2 weeks. But I wash in between. Look, I wash every day in between.
Right. And that would be what do they call that? A cat's wash at the sink.
It'd be a good cat's wash, actually.
All right. would you be sharing your hygiene habits with other people? Would you ever have a conversation with people and get a reaction to them about how you feel about?
Well, I don't discuss it with other. I don't talk about it. You know, I just get on with it. You know,
is it a generational thing, Mary? Do you think? Do you think people got into the kind of more Mary, maybe American idea of having like two or three showers a day?
Well, when I was growing up, I didn't have showers, so I don't see any. I don't think it's any big. You know, when I was young in the country, I had no showers, so you know.
Tell me, Mary. In terms of then, are you saving a fortune on the washing machine?
Well, actually, I don't. I'm old fashioned. I have an outside sink at the back of the kitchen. And I use it for everything. So I steep my clothes in an outside sink, and I only rinse in a cold rinse in the washing machine and the spin. That's all I do.
So you don't actually use the washing machine to wash your clothes at all?
Well, I do now and again. I do, but I think my clothes are cleaner the way I do them. The spotless coming out of the sink and out of the spin dryer. Yeah. I have a washing machine now, but I only do a cold rinse in it.
Well, I'm just looking here. Wool jumpers only need, this is from the French agency again, wool jumpers only need a wash after 15 days wear, and bed sheets and pyjamas after a week. What about the bed sheets, Mary?
Oh, no, I change my sheets regularly now.
Yeah, there's nothing
I'm very,
nice.
I like my bed clean. Oh no, I like my bed. I change my sheets regularly. Yeah, and duvet cover and all that. Yeah.
There is nothing nicer than getting into a bed with freshly laundered sheets, is there? It's one of the great pleasures of our time, I think.
It's the only pleasure I have.
Mary, don't say that, Mary.
Well, one of them.
Listen, hang on there, Mary. I've got Mike on the other line.
Okay.
Mike, how are you, Mike?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm grand, Mike.
I have a story to tell you.
Go on.
I admit it. which is true, maybe a couple of years ago, that I never wash towels.
You never wash towels?
Well, maybe once a month. Right, but hang on a second. Here's the logic of it, and I'll give you the conversation. People were saying, people said, what's the logic? And I said, well, I'm good at washing myself for you. You come out of a shower, you're supposed to wash yourself, so why do you need to wash the towel?
But
that's the first.
Okay, go on.
The second point, then someone said to me, but what about, you know, bugs on your body? And I, to which my response was, microbes on your body, to which my response was, if we didn't have microbes on our body, we'd be dead.
So you're very, you've thought about this and you, this is not, it's not because you're lazy, Mike, is it by any chance?
No, I'm actually a very active person at my age. Now, the other thing I sometimes do now in the summer, if you want to air it, just chuck it on the line.
Yeah, because you see, that's the thing I'm thinking about the towels now, because if you get a towel damp, that kind of musty, damp smell you that can come from a heavy towel that's wet, does that not bother you?
I damn well get it, and I've a good set of ear, I've got a good set of nostrils.
Right.
Anyway, look, listen, we have to save the environment. People survived without washing everything for years. You need to wash your underwear, you need to wash your socks. For a man, you need to wash shirts. And other than that, there's not a lot you need to do. Don't wash a pair of trousers until you've checked whether they've got a stains on them.
How many
pullovers.
Goes, Mike, how many goes would you get out of a pair of trousers?
Depends. I check if there are stains on them. If they've no stains on them, I could get 2 weeks out of them. I only wash trousers if they're stained.
And would you ever give them a sniff and just to make sure there was no issues there?
No. For God, if you look for a reason to do something, you'll find it.
You see, because you see those, if you stay in a lot of hotels now, they will have a little sign in the bathroom and it will tell you that we are a hotel that takes our environmental responsibilities really seriously. So we only wash the towels if you don't expect us to wash the towels unless you absolutely want them to. So they're kind of pushing you towards reusing the towels for days on end.
Yeah.
And I do wonder whether that's more about saving the laundry bills of the hotel than...
Of course it is, but they're right too. And the other thing is, I hate when I'm in a hotel and I've stayed there for three or four nights, people coming into the room to tidy it. What do you want that for?
It's the what do they call it? The turndown service, isn't it? Where they come in and they leave the little chocolate on your pillow.
Well, I've never got that, so I'm glad you reminded me of that because I'm losing out on that one. Listen, look, I've given you my tuppence halfpenny worth in this one. But, you know, we've got to save the environment. The carry-on, I don't know, the carry-on with some people, with regard, people who clean their, who wash their towels after every single use are just mad in the head.
What about bed sheets for you, Mike?
They're better the longer you leave them. You know? They have a settled feel to them. See ya. That last one I'm making up slightly.
Okay.
Take care.
I'm glad to hear it, Mike. But good luck. I've got another Mary on now. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. I've just been listening to your conversation.
Indeed. And?
And I had a few points to make.
Go on.
A few suggestions. When people come in from work or children come in from school, I would recommend that they change into their tracksuit and their house clothes and they hang up their clothes ready to go for the next day. I think, you know, if you come in and you cook in the clothes and you do your work and the rest of it.
I was just going to say that for me is the thing, is cooking smells. If you cook, I kind of feel I should have a whole wardrobe just for when I'm cooking the dinner because it's impossible to get that smell of, you know, frying onions or whatever it is you're doing at a cooker.
Wear and tear, and things don't keep crisp or fresh, and, you know, you do have to change more often if you tar it out in the same clothes.
And what you make of Mike's never washes a towel, that, you know, you're clean when you use them, so why would you need to wash?
What I would say is I certainly wouldn't be for washing towels frequently. Yeah. I think that if you, personally, I will dry off with the face flannel so that the excess water is gone, and then just dry off with the towel and it's ready to hang up and do me for several goes. I wouldn't be washing towels, wash them weekly, but certainly not every day.
Yeah, because I suppose and of all the things, towels, of course, will take the most drying, and maybe that's one of the things that uses a lot of energy, which is part of what this original conversation started off with, the Ecological Transition Agency in France.
Yes.
Have you ever used a dehumidifier for drying clothes, Mary?
No, I haven't.
Well,
I have one of these things you put up in the kitchen at night, and I put towels and things out on that when I wash them, mm-hmm. and then I pop them into the dryer just to soften them for about 10 minutes when they're dry or nearly dry.
And that gets you there. Yeah, I have just been persuaded to invest in a dehumidifier. And
right.
it's life-changing, Mary. That's all I'll say. It's life-changing. Much more energy efficient, and saves you from ever having to turn on the tumble dryer if you have to dry indoors. So that's my top tip.
So do you leave it on? You put it on when you have the washing?
Yeah, if you have to dry clothes indoors, this is, and if you hang them on an airing rack or whatever,
yes.
You switch it on. You can leave it on for a few hours. It's very, very low energy consumption, and it does an incredible job.
Lovely.
Yeah. If you get one with a laundry
setting. The moisture evaporates.
Yeah, and it collects the moisture in a little drawer. There you are, Mary.
I'll think about that.
Mary, thanks for that. Who else have I got? Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
You're actually living in France, Anne, are you?
Today I am, yes. Tomorrow I'm leaving, but yes, I live in Cannes and Dublin.
Oh, lovely. And what do you make of this advice from the French agency then?
Well, I wasn't able to read the agency because I spoke to your colleague and I didn't have time to look it up. So I don't know exactly what she said. But I do think from experience that that French people are cleaner and dress better than Dublin people.
Ooh, that's a very big statement, Anne.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Maybe I'm just being a teeny bit snobbish. I don't own a hoodie, I don't own sneakers, and I don't own jeans. I dress well, and I change my clothes every day. And when I was married, my husband is dead, we shared a towel every day, one day. We just shared it, and then we put it in the machine.
What?
And I just feel that I was on the dart recently, and at the risk of making comments about I love my country, I adore it. I'm a taxpayer there, I love it. I worked for the Irish government my whole life. Every man on that train, not one man was in a suit. Every man was in a filthy hoodie, filthy jeans, and filthy sneakers, and a rucksack going to work. I just thought it was sad.
Well, hang on a second. It's filthy. I doubt if everyone was turning up into work.
That's a strong word. I'm sorry. It's untidy. And I'm talking about the dart from Black Rock into Dublin. It's not exactly it's an interesting area. Nobody was dressed as if they were going to the office, and they were going to the office.
But hasn't the idea of office wear completely changed? And again, I go back to COVID. I think that kind of got the whole leisure wear as work wear in a totally different zone. No?
Yeah, but you can wear leisure wear and look good in it, and you can wear leisure wear and look crap in it.
Right.
Most of these men on the train that morning looked as if they had the jeans on for 60 days, not 30 days.
Well, they were doing their bit for the environment anyway, and if that was the case.
I'm just having a laugh here. I'm just having a laugh, Kate. I'm packing my bags to go to London tomorrow, and I'm thinking, why don't you finish packing your bag? And it's a lovely day here. But no, I'd be interested to know where this article came from, because, mind you, I do live in Cannes. Cannes is rather a snobbish town. You must know.
Indeed. Snobbish, but very chic as well, Cannes. It's the most chic of places.
Dublin can be very chic too. But it's very interesting if you travel. I don't know if you travel on public transport in Ireland. I do. I'm 80 years old. I have a travel pass and I travel on the bus. Women still dress beautifully in Dublin. Men don't.
Okay, interesting. We'll put that one out there, Anne. Thank you for that. Go back and pack your lovely clothes to come back to us tomorrow. That's Anne there. Diana, good afternoon.
Hi there. How are you?
Do you know what, Diane? I don't know how I am after all this chat. How often do you wash your jeans, Diana?
Well, it depends. It's approximately once a month. Now, obviously, if I go out and I get mucky from dog walking or whatever, then it'll be a bit sooner. Mm-hmm. And bed clothes about once a fortnight. Sheets and things.
Okay.
About once a fortnight.
Right.
We do a regular full wash maybe about once a week, and that would include undies and things like that and whatever. But T-shirts as well. I mean, I could get maybe nearly a week out of a T-shirt.
Well, I mean, that's what they're saying. That's not so crazy, according to the French people. They're saying 5 days out of a T-shirt they're saying you should be getting. 30 days.
Absolutely.
So you're kind of bang on, really. 30 days for jeans, they're saying. 5 days for a T-shirt. Now, they are saying, seven times you get seven wears out of a bra.
Well, I haven't... Between you, me and the lamppost, and nobody else, obviously, that's listening in, I haven't worn a bra, really, for about 15 years.
You haven't?
No.
Right.
You don't need it.
You don't need it, and I'm sure it's a very freeing decision to make.
Well, and it's kind of like, why did I ever wear one in the first place? No, we never had kids, put it this way. So there's just myself and my husband, and... I wear kind of partially, mainly wool sweaters. Mm-hmm. They could be 80% wool and 20% polyester or whatever. But they would normally get hand washed, because I know that when I was growing up as a kid that we were told never wash wool in hot water and never use a washing machine because that could shrink them. We have a clothesline outside so that the clothes go out in the line once they're washed. Mm-hmm. And if it starts to rain, then they come in and they put on clothes airers, maybe in the sitting room when we have a fire going, or in our pseudo dining room, they go in there and the door is left a bit open into the room so that air can circulate. And our washing machine we put in when we built here about 25 years ago, we put the washing machine in and it's still going strong.
Your washing machine is 25 years old?
Yeah.
And no bother to it?
No bother whatsoever. Never had a moment's problems with it.
Well, it's been well minded and given lots of rest, obviously, Diana, in your house. you don't wear any bra at all. What about the rest of the undergarments? Would they be seeing the inside of the washing machine very often?
They'd be seeing I probably get about 2 days' wear, maybe. Then change and have a bit of a wipe down so that it.
My God!
I do a little bit of a hand wash as well between showers. I mean, we shower about once a week on average. It could be maybe once every.
You're pulling my leg now, Diane. Are you? You'd only have a shower once a week.
Yeah. Seriously.
Seriously.
No, I'm not saying I don't wash in other manners, but we only have a shower once a week and we don't have a bath. So it's shower only. And like I say, about once a week, and that's perfectly fine.
You must use very little hot water in your house.
not a lot, no. And in fairness, I mean, I haven't heard anyone come up to me and say, God, you stink, when was your last bath? About 5 years ago.
Uh, Okay. But as you say, you do the washing in between. Let's just be clear about that.
Oh, we do.
Listen, Diana, great talking to you. I have to take a break. Good luck.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, we're going to leave that one there. And I want to go back to this very important story that we were talking about yesterday. And it's astonishing the number of people this has actually happened to. Bridie, I'll go to you first. Bridie, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, we're talking about this business of people going for their public services card and being asked about their adoption status or whatever at the counter. So just take me back to this situation. I think we're talking about 10 years ago, Bridie, are we?
About 10 years ago. My story is somewhat different. I'm actually not adopted, but my son is adopted. We adopted him 24 years ago. And listening to your callers, I now realise we weren't an isolated incident. It was about 10 years ago when he was in a transition year. The class were applying for their public service cards as part of a TY project. So actually, social welfare staff came down to the school, did the photographs, processed the forms, and the card was going to arrive in the post. So I had said to my son, no sign of the card. And he said, oh, no, they told me I have to go down to the social welfare office. So I didn't think anything of it. So it was a few weeks later, we went down to the social welfare office, took queued up, went to the counter, and it was a male member of staff, and he clicked on his computer and he just looked at my son and he said, you know, you're adopted. And like, adoption in our family is a very positive thing, and of course my son knew from the get-go, and he just said yes. So I said,
so you were standing beside your son at this...
I was standing beside my son. He was only, what, 14, 15 at this stage. And he just said, you know you're adopted. And I said, good job he does. But he never flinched. He never said, oh, I'm sorry. And I just thought, oh, my God, if this happened to somebody that didn't know. But as I say, adoption in our family, it's a very positive experience. And it was never any big deal with my son. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we had to come back with the...
So hang on, your son, this didn't bother your son?
Didn't bother him, and probably had it bothered him, I probably would have been guns blazing in looking for the manager complaining. Yeah. But you know something that always has bugged me for the past 10 years, because I used to say, imagine if there was a child in that didn't know they were adopted. And I just, personally, I think it's a staff training issue. I think they need to be aware of how sensitive, you know, of a subject it is with adopted people. And GDPR, if you're in an office where everybody can hear, we were lucky there was only myself and my son at the counter, so it was private, that people couldn't hear. But he literally just came out with that, you know you're adopted. So we went back and got the cert, and in a couple of days then the public service card came out. And to this day, I was always sorry that I never complained.
But when you said to him, it's a good job he does know, when he said, do you know you're adopted? And you said, well, it's a good job he does know. What did he actually say in response to that?
Never flinched. He just continued looking at the screen, clicking away, and told us that we'd have to come back with the birth cert. It completely went over his head. That's what I mean. I don't think they realise, you know. Now, as I say, if my son had to be upset, I probably would have went in. And funny, I was speaking to my husband and saying about your programme yesterday, and he said, go for it. This is your chance to get it off your chest. I didn't realise it had happened to other people, and it's still happening.
So he's obviously been listening to you talking about it.
Of course, yeah.
We've got, just stay there, Bridie, for one second. We had a statement from the Department of Social Protection in relation to this, and honest to God, I read it out earlier in the week, and I couldn't make head nor tail of it because it seemed to be contradicting itself halfway through. We did get another statement from them, and just in relation, I want to, because you mentioned the training for staff, and they do make a reference to that. They say that the staff of the department are cognizant that some of those wishing to verify their identity to get a public services card may be adopted. And they say this is part of their training. So they we're told they are being trained to deal with this. And they're advised that, you know, what the data is. And they're saying for a person born in Ireland, you have to check details provided on the General Register of Births, which staff have access to. The difficulty is those staff in that office do not have access to adoption records. And of course, that's where the problem stands. But it says in cases where they are unable to locate the details based on the information provided by the customer, the officer is advised to contact the General Register Office Help Desk to further clarify. And then they, for further clarity, they say. And then they say the department regularly reviews its processes to support customers, taking into account customer feedback and notes the concerns raised by callers to Liveline. So they're listening to us there, and they are noting that this is obviously an issue and has been an issue going back. And we had somebody yesterday, it was 12 years ago when it happened to them, and they were like so upset.
Oh, I know. Well, obviously the guy serving us was on a day off the day of the training, because like he literally just came out with that sentence. And thank God my son was okay about it. But I just thought, oh, if this happened to someone else. And I couldn't believe it then when I was listening to your other caller. So it is still happening. But that's why I just wanted to come on and give my experience to you. And thank you very much, Kayleigh, for highlighting it. I think life can be tough enough for adopted people. And I think the staff should be more sensitive and, you know, when they're dealing with people that are adopted and don't really try.
Absolutely. And Bridie, tell me your own story very briefly. Like you adopted your son 24 years ago.
He was 12 weeks old. The best thing that ever happened to us.
Ah. And to him, I'd say as well, Bridie, talking to you. So it's, as you say, from the get-go, you were open with your son.
Oh yeah, he always knew that he was adopted, and even Doc Day is celebrated as well as his birthday. So yeah, it's a very positive. Yeah, it's a very positive thing. Yeah.
So the best thing that ever happened to you. I'm sure I'd love to, would you love to have your mammy out there saying the day she got you is the best thing. Will you hang on, Bridie? I've got Amanda on the other line.
I will indeed.
Another case of this. Amanda, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie, how are you?
So Bridie's was in that office 10 years ago. This happened to you a year ago, is it?
Yeah, a year ago I went in to apply for my card. Now, fortunately, I went in at the end of the day, so it was very quiet. I think there were only another couple of people there waiting in the queue. And a lovely girl on the counter. So I gave all my documents and she was looking up my birth cert, and it was just like I didn't exist. And I couldn't figure it out. I was standing there going, but here's my passport. I do exist. And I just didn't tweak at the beginning. And then it was like, oh, OK, it's obviously because I'm adopted. So I had to tell her that I was adopted, which, you know, she was lovely about it. But I think growing up as an adopted person, you always feel different. And then I suppose you get a little bit older and you come to terms with it. And, you know, then it's just when you go into a place like that again, it's brought to the forefront again, and you're like, oh, you know, I have to explain, I'm adopted, I don't have a normal birth cert. Similar situation happened applying for a marriage license. Myself and my partner a year ago went into town, we went into the offices, they could find his birth cert straight away, and then they were like, oh, you're not on the system. And again, oh, it's because I'm adopted, I have to explain it again. So it's just constant.
I think, yeah, and again, we kind of got into this a little with some of our callers yesterday that, I mean, to some ears, it might sound like, sure, it's just a little glitch and you just explain and, you know, what of it kind of thing.
No,
but there is something about the fact that everybody else gets it one way and you're not.
You're
not in the system. Literally those words, you're not in our system.
Yeah.
We can't find you.
Yeah, you don't exist. Yeah, absolutely. And it happened back in the 80s. Now, obviously, things were different back then. I was in school and for some reason we all had to bring in our birth certificate, and my teacher at the time called out, oh, you're adopted, at the top of the class. Now, again, if that wasn't, you know, that was my private information. I've always been quite open about the fact that I'm adopted. It's not a secret. I have a wonderful, wonderful birth parents. I've tracked down my birth mother. We have a great relationship. But some people are very sensitive about those kind of things. So
And and also when you're in school, when you're that age, you don't want to be different. It's the thing you absolutely don't want is to be the one that's not the same as everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will you hang on? I've got Catherine.
Of course,
Catherine, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you, Katie? Hi.
Your situation, Catherine, you're adopted as well yourself?
I am, indeed. I was born in 1962, so adopted in 1963. Yeah.
And it was, again, just a few years ago when you went looking for the public services card?
It was. I went in February 2020 to my local intro office in Dublin, and similar story to the last caller, brought my, what I thought was my necessary documentation, passport, had a driver's license, everything with me, and handed over, I think, just my recollection, my driver's license. And the girl, obviously trying to find me on the system, was having difficulty, said, oh, I can't seem to find you, and you know, didn't come back with anything at all like that. And then I said, well, possibly it's because I'm adopted. So I volunteered that information, and she said, oh yes, that would be it. And she told me that it would be necessary for me to get a copy of the Adopted Children's Register, and which would have a number on it that would relate to my original birth certificate. So because I'm sort of a bit balshy, and because I'm sensitive about this issue, I just refused. You know, I don't see why. I'm no different. I was born in Ireland. I'm a citizen of Ireland. I've paid tax in Ireland. And that 1962 birth certificate has done me and seen me through lots of different things, seen me, you know, get mortgages, get my passport, you know, all the necessary things that everyone does. So she went off, and she went to her supervisor, had a word with her. The supervisor came out, explained to me the same thing. I would have to get this copy of the adopted children's register. And again, just to say, I did said the same thing to her, that I refused. I thought it was discriminatory. Why should I, when I had all the other documents? And she went off, and a couple of minutes elapsed. Bear in mind, I'm in this open office, saying this with quite a good a number of people listening to what was being said, which I found quite, well, not pleasant. And
were you conscious of that, Catherine?
I sort of was, because, you know, it's something that is private, and it's quite, you know, it's a very emotive issue. And, you know, I don't see why I could be, you know, I should be treated any differently. And again, it's just because it's a bugbear with me, and, you know, maybe other people feel differently, and I appreciate that. But supervisor, and I have to, you know, stress that everybody I dealt with that day was extremely pleasant. It was, you know, very nice, and said everything was said in a pleasant way. But the supervisor came back after a couple of minutes, and she just said, we're going to give you that card.
Oh, so you actually booked the system, Catherine?
I don't know, but it worked out for me that day. And, you know, I actually had my original birth certificate with me, which I wasn't really willing to hand over, but I did have it. And, you know, and it really annoys me that, you know, because I, you know, any adopted person that actually does give in their adopted children's register with the entry number and the date of their adoption order, you know, the person can, other people, you know, this is before the Act came in, Birth Information Act. So, you know, adopted people, technically, unless you did your own trace, wouldn't have their original birth certificate with their birth name, which I did because I had done my own trace. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that somebody in the system, you know, working in this department could look at my information, you know.
But isn't that, I mean, that's a good point, though, that, you know, because the number and all the people actually we spoke to yesterday and again today, people knew their own, had gone and done the tracing if they hadn't known it from their own parents, from their adopted parents. They knew, they had the name to give to the person behind the counter in the intro office to check for them, to, you know.
Yeah.
If you didn't, would you be stuck? I'm just thinking now, if you couldn't give them the name that they had to go searching for.
I don't honestly know. Yeah. I mean, it's a difficult one, really. But, you know, I've always been known by my name, you know, my adoptive name. And, you know, since, well, obviously since I was adopted and, you know, this other name, whereas I do appreciate that it was the name that was given by my birth mother. And, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about that. But, I mean, I haven't been known by that.
That's not you, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Catherine, so, Amanda, you're still with us, are you, Amanda?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
I mean, it just strikes me the difference in, you know, a difference in age between yourself and Catherine.
Yeah.
But the exact same issue. Didn't occur to you to stand your ground and say, look, this is my...
I've gone through it so many times in different scenarios. I was just like, oh, that's the reason. I'm just kind of used to it.
Yeah.
I've nearly kind of got over it. But it's interesting what the previous caller is saying just about the birth name, because I did my own trace and I have my original birth cert, but there is no name on it. My name's like, I wasn't given a name.
Oh.
So I've only got my adopted name to go by.
So... So the only name you ever had was the one you got on your adoption? So how come there was a difference then with names in the system? Or it was the connection with your...
They just couldn't find me on the system. That seemed to be... I just didn't exist, because obviously the systems aren't connected and they can't access the adopted birth certificate system.
So there was no OM, because there was no name. All that was there was a cert with no name on it.
Mm-hmm.
You had to go as well, getting your marriage license. Catherine, you had an issue as well, didn't you, when you were getting married?
I did. Yes, my husband and I went to see our local priest, and because when he heard I was adopted, he would have to go further and check it out, because. I mean, this. Bear in mind, this was 1985, so you know, they had to check that my husband and myself were not in any way related, closely related, which obviously we weren't. And but you know, this had to be. I mean, because we were being married in a
Catholic church,
and obviously it still happens in registry offices. Yeah.
I presume. Yeah. God, I hadn't even thought about that. But I wonder, is that a matter of course as well? That has to be verified before.
I'm not sure now. I haven't actually asked anyone else that I know that's adopted if that is the norm or what. But I suppose, you know, it's a bit late in the day, really, because we're getting married a couple of months later. But, you know, I guess it's a good thing, really, that, yeah. But I hadn't thought about it until he said it to me, that particular.
Again, but just another thing you need to think about. I have to take a break. Stay with me. We have more calls coming in on this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we were talking there to Bridie and Amanda and Catherine before the break about their experiences when they went for public services cards. Siobhan, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. Hi. I'm just calling with a very similar story, but mine happened about 10 years ago and I went in to get my public service card, and the gentleman behind the desk was a very pleasant man. But I had to give some details to identify myself, like my date of birth and that. And I told him my name and he says, no, that's not your name. And I said, well, I think I know who I am. So, yeah, no, that is my name. And he kept questioning me, and then he just turned the screen around to me and he says, this is your name. And again,
you had not volunteered the information that you were adopted?
No, I hadn't at all. And I was very conscious that this was like, you know, if I knew I was adopted, so I knew the information. I actually know the information, but the whole thing was that, first of all, he was telling me I wasn't who I was, you know, was. And then he proceeds to turn all the information around to me to show me my name and my biological name. And if I hadn't known That was big. It was big enough as it was. I was very upset because somebody, it's like somebody taking the control out of your life, out of the situation. Mm-hmm. But then, so what I did was after all that, I went and I rang somebody when I got home in the public service card, say head office, whatever. And I think I emailed them in the end, and they I explained what happened, and they went off and researched it and came back and said that, in fact, they were very, very apologetic, but that there had been a clerical error in the transferring of the names. Maybe it's from Tuzla or wherever. I don't know where they got it, but the information hadn't been passed across correctly. So they had, basically, yeah, so that was it. So, but they did apologise, but that is 10 years ago, like. So you think staff training would be better now, or things would have changed. But it really goes back to the vulnerability of somebody who is adopted. And, you know, when these kind of things happen, it has a huge impact. It's not to be ignored, you know?
Yeah, and again, that's what we're trying to get to explain to people, and get people to explain to us, and get, you know, our listeners to understand why that just be stood there in a public office and to be confronted with that, why that has upset. And clearly, in every single case, was so upsetting for people.
Yeah, I mean, it's your identity, and if anybody puts themselves in, you know, in a position like this, whether they're adopted or not, if they can just imagine, it's just you're questioned from the outset, and you're confused because, you know, you know it's a legal document. You're adopted. It's a legal thing. It's not just you know, even fostering is quite it's slightly different. It's not as permanent, but. Sorry, I'm just out somewhere here. Sorry about this. It's just somebody questioning you and your identity. That's really it. And that was very hard at the time. I remember, I just remember the feelings of it. All the details are a bit less clear, but it was because it was so long ago. But the fact that you're talking about it now, that's really concerning, that people... You know, they have been told, and yet nothing's been done.
Well, I don't know if something has been done. They say they've been training staff, and but it's clearly still an issue for people. And because Amanda, it was just a year ago with you, Amanda, wasn't it?
Yeah, a year ago. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think our opening, found out about this at all was our caller, and it had just happened a couple of weeks ago. Eileen, which is our caller, a couple of afternoons ago. So it's clearly a live issue, and it has caused really untold upset for people. Completely needlessly, you'd have to say. Siobhan, thanks a mil for that. Bernard. Good afternoon.
Hello. How you doing?
Hiya, Bernard.
Yeah, well, I had a similar experience there as well to the other people that were talking. Some time ago, I got a letter saying that in order to continue to receive my disability allowance, I would have to apply for a PSE card. And I went to the social welfare, and as I was adopted, they wouldn't accept me short birth cert. Mm-hmm. Then I was told that I'd have to get an adoption cert, which I'd never heard of before till then. I was born in Ireland and lived here all my life and used my short birth cert, the only one I have, for everything over the past 65 years without any problem. Got married, I made my communion, confirmation, got baptised with it, and there was never any problem. I must say, I found that all very upsetting, and felt I was being humiliated and discriminated against because I was adopted. I also felt it was an invasion of my privacy. I usually wouldn't be so sensitive about it, but found the process really upsetting and dragged up the past that I tried to forget and move on, you know?
Yeah.
But I felt I had no choice then to get an adoption cert to receive my allowance. And then after that, I had heard a solicitor on the RTE News say that the PSC card uses may be illegal. And after all, I was put through. I know that, as I say, other people I've heard there on the radio were put through the process and feel the same as me, you know?
Yeah,
horrible
I think
situation, you know.
Yeah, Bernard, and I suppose there was obviously a bit of there was a kerfuffle and controversy around the introduction of the public services card, which was, I think, the term was mandatory but not compulsory, or compulsory but not mandatory.
Yes,
one of those
something
things.
Something like that. And yes, we were all put through all this, you know, dragging up the past and everything else.
I suppose there is a question, because what we've been looking at is the fact that the issue seems to be, the technical issue seems to be, that the records that they have access to in the public services card desks, when you go to get your public services card, they do not include the adoption. They don't have access to adoption records. And we're kind of asking the question, why can't they just make those available to the people who have to work these desks and work the counter and deal with, often people, obviously, we have a lot of people in this country adopted. Why don't they have access for that? But and maybe another question is one that Catherine raised as well, is why do we need this long cert for this one thing? If you can get married, if you can get a passport, if you can
exactly,
you know, get
yeah.
use it for all the other things, and
it's
accepted.
Right up until I was 65, exactly, yes.
Why is it necessary to do this?
You know, yeah. I agree with what you're saying there, yes.
Why was it so upsetting for you, Bernard? What was it about it that made you so upset?
I wouldn't be usually upset at all, you know. It usually wouldn't bother me, but it was only a day or two later it really hit me, and I just felt that, you know, I was being discriminated against because I was adopted, you know. This adoption certificate I had to get because I was adopted. And I just felt the whole process very humiliating and upsetting, you know.
And the fact that happening in public.
Things like that usually wouldn't bother me that much, you know. But I shed a few tears, you know. But
It affected you that much.
I wouldn't be usually like that at all, you know.
Oh, Bernard, that's a desperate.
Yeah. For anybody, and as the other people rightly said, for anybody that didn't know, that could be a huge shock to them.
Oh, that doesn't bear thinking about, I think. If you were to find something as fundamental to your identity as that in an office in that way, that would be, I can't even imagine what impact that would have on somebody.
Yeah, I don't know who works in these offices and that, but they certainly need to be more trained up, I think, you know, in sensitivities and that sort of thing, you know. I mean, it's a horrible situation, you know. I wanted to write to a solicitor about it and send them a letter, you know, and see what the story was about it, because I thought it was shocking. Nobody should have to go through that, especially when you have your small cert, your short birth cert. You've used it for getting baptised, making your communion, making your confirmation. I got married with it, you know, and there was no questions asked.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. It is a very strange anomaly, and it is affecting a lot of people. And as I say, we've got a lot of calls about it. Bernard, thank you for that. I have to take another break now. Thank you. And we know that the Department of Social Protection are actually listening to us, because they have sent us a statement telling us that.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And just thanks again to all of those callers. They're very personal stories that they're sharing with us, and we do appreciate it. And we know you're getting in touch because you want that situation changed for everybody else. I want to move on now, though, to Bob Marley, who would have been 80 if he were alive. And people today on what would be his birthday remembering an extraordinary gig. I think his last open air gig, if I'm correct in that, and somebody who will be able to correct me on that, is Ken Doyle. Ken, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Katie.
Ken, people will remember you, of course, with Bagatelle. And you were there in Dalymount Park. for that gig?
It was like an out-of-body experience, nearly, to be on the sharing the same stage with the legend, who I loved his music before we ever played with him. I've loved it since I heard the first album. Incredible. And the day was just a spectacular day. Ireland wasn't that colourful at the time.
We were 1980, Ken, is it?
1980, yeah.
Yeah. And how did... how did you get... I mean, it was an extraordinary situation to find yourselves in. How did you get the gig?
Well, our manager at the time was Bolivar Barry, and his partner was Pat Egan, and they brought Bob Marley over, and he got us the gig. So we did the Seamus the Cush lead down in Cork the night before, and then we came up and did that the next day. And it was just, we were happening like the Summer in Dublin was number one at the time, the band was the hottest thing in Ireland and stuff like that. It was just an amazing, heady time, really.
Incredible, yeah. So many people thinking about you for the last couple of weeks, obviously with the 46A being taken off the route, Ken. But yeah, that takes me right back to that time. I was obviously a very young child, a very, very young child, Ken. but describe the day to me then, when you got there.
But the day was just amazing because, as I said, the band were very colourful. They had these bomber jackets with the Rastafarian flag, you know, across in the stripes. They crocheted berets with the colours on them. They were very colourful themselves. Now, Bob kept himself very much to himself in his dressing room. But the band were out kicking football on the street with the kids and that, and the local area, local kids in the area. And they were lovely lads, and they were great musicians. But they were saying to us, you know, we love the Irish people, they're so friendly, you know. They were saying, a lot of them do say we speak like Kerrymen. They were lovely lads, and not only that, his wife, Rita Marley, was there with the i3. She's a lovely woman, the whole lot of them. But there was just everything about it, the sound for an outdoor gig as well, was just spectacular. And the sound engineer just danced from the, you know, they have the scaffolding in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
The whole gig, it was an amazing experience, both on the stage and I went down in the crowd for some of it as well. It was an amazing day. Anyone who was at it would tell you, it was almost like a kind of a mini religious experience, really.
I think, is it a bit like the GPO though? Is there a lot more people who claim they were there now than were actually there, Ken? How many people were actually at the gig on the day, do you reckon?
I don't actually know, but the whole place was completely stuffed. Now, I don't know how many Dailyman Park holds, but there was no space, really. It was full, you know. So maybe that the GPO might have had the rubber walls, but I don't think Dailyman Park has.
And you were the warmer. Was there anybody else on the bill on the day?
Johnny Lane was there from Slim Chance. He had that, how come when you draw the ace of hearts, you always draw the ace of spades. He was from the Faces.
Mm-hmm.
As well. Again, lovely bunch of lads. But I mean, the crack with them and all, behind stage and all, it was just an amazing day for us. And don't forget, things were really only starting to kick off for us at the time, unexpectedly. Like, we didn't expect Summer in Dublin to turn into what it did. It was just a song on the programme. And all of a sudden, it just became, wow, you know.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, it was. That's total iconic stuff now, isn't it? Somewhere in Dublin.
I remember the first time I heard it, Liam played it for us up in John O'Brien's house, the Star to Bagatelle, on an out of tune upright piano, and he just said, I write a few songs as well, here's one of them. And everybody just looked at him and said, did you write that? He said, yeah. I said, that's more than a song, you know. No, we didn't know what it would turn into, but it was a simple song, but yet it was very complex as well. And it was a day in the life, because it is actually a day that happened to him. Because he had been at the Boomtown Rats were starting out in Moran's Hotel, they were doing a gig, and he heard them playing the Seeger song, Rock and Roll Never Forgets. He was walking down after leaving his flat in Leeson Street with his bag and his guitar to jump on the 46A to go out to Monkstown in Longford Terrace, his new flat, beside the Purty Kitchen, and the bus took a sharp left at the bottom because he wasn't thinking that song was going around in his head. Nearly ran over him. My Hummer was smothered by a 46A. He jumped on the bus and he went down the back with his bag and his guitar and he saw the dishevelled drunk coming up to him and he said, oh no. And he said, you know, you make great money with that guitar. I'll get you working all with that. And he was saying, I was glad we weren't going too far.
it is a great song. A great, great song. And great times. Ken, hang on. Okay.
Hello, Katie, how are you?
Great. Did you meet him as well?
I did.
Tell me.
I'm here in Kilkenny, and I ran Pops and Posters record shop in Kilkenny. And so I sold all the tickets for in the Southeast region for Bob Marley. And I ran a bus up to it then, so we had 50-something odd people on the bus going up. And just to give you a little... back then, there was no such thing as recycling, you know. So the usual, you brought your bags and your cans on the bus. So I think we'd have to trail the whole way up to Dublin. But anyway,
How much were the tickets for?
Actually, I have the ticket at home and I cannot see the price on it. I think it was seven. It could have been £7 something. I have the ticket from the concert, and When we got up to Daly Mount, we went straight in and we found our spot. And like what Ken was talking to there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the colours. It was absolutely fantastic. But I was a huge fan of Bob Marley's. I never thought I'd get to see him in 1980 because he died in 1981. Yeah. And it was for me, and it was a very, very kind of a spiritual uplifting experience as well. And one little incident happened. My brother, who was very, very young at the time, he got short taken and he went to pee up on the hill and he got caught and he was thrown out and I had to go and get the bouncers and get him back in. And, you know, so, but these stories, so much happened. I got backstage afterwards to see him as well. But for me...
How did you get backstage, Kay?
Well, because I sold all the tickets and I got free into the concert and I got... Terry was the guy I dealt with, and he taught me that I was welcome to come backstage after the concert. But I ran the bus up to Dublin, right?
Uh-huh.
So there was a lady that asked me, would I look after her too, one of her kids and a friend. And they were only 14 years of age. And I told them I will be responsible for them on the bus, but I cannot be responsible for them in Daly Mount. And lo and behold, I'm backstage, and then I get the call. I have to go to the kids. Never made it back to the bus, so we had to go looking for him. It took us an hour and a half to go looking for him. But anyway, it didn't take from the concert. I was as high as a kite. I was just so high on it.
I was going to say, high on what now, though, okay?
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, I got close up to the stage, and Redemption Song was the big one at the time, and I went right up to the front of the stage, and he told the band all had to leave, and he came right out to the front of the stage and he sang Redemption. I was after shouting out Redemption Song and he sang it, and I thought he was singing it, that I was the only one in the park. But if you went to one certain side of the park, I was having a spiritual experience with the music, but if you went to another side of the park and you inhaled too deeply, you were having another sort of a high. But I got invited over then a number of years later to the Jamaican Council in London. They were having a special commemorative thing on Bob Marley, and I was the only one in Ireland that got a call to it. And I went over and I met these journalists from there was one guy, he had a museum in Jamaica, and you know, all these different people. There was about 30 of us there. We ate Jamaican food and drank Jamaican beer, and it was just a beautiful time. And I met Rita, I met the I3s, I met Ziggy. They were all there, you know, and I followed Ziggy's career as well. I don't know how many children Bob had, but allegedly he had a lot. But I met Ziggy, and sure, Ziggy now, listening to Ziggy Marley sing, close your eyes and you hear Bob.
You could be listening to Bob.
But Bob Marley, a legend, his music will live on forever and ever. Reggae is he was absolutely amazing on the day.
Let's have a listen to him then, and let's go back to that song, that moment. This is a Redemption Song.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And that was lovely, wasn't it? I was really enjoying that. I want to go back now, though, and we haven't forgotten about you out there, the people who are still waiting for power to be restored after Storm Éowyn. As of 10:30 this morning, 12,000 homes, approximately, this is what the ESB are telling us, 12,000 homes, farms and businesses remain without power, and the worst affected areas are Galway, Leitrim, Mayo and Roscommon. Catherine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Oh, Catherine, so you're in Drumshambo.
I'm in Drumshambo, yes, and we're on day 14.
Oh my God, how are you getting on, Catherine?
It's a struggle, Katie. I have a son, David, with an intellectual disability and severe epilepsy. So I suppose 4 or 5 years ago, we decided we'd get a generator because this was happening on a regular occurrence.
So what does David need? David is an adult now.
He's an adult now. He's 33. Yeah, a big lad.
And what does he need?
He needs a lot. He has behaviour problems, and he has a wheelchair that has to be charged. He has to be hoisted. He has a low profile in bed, which it's electric, and he doesn't like the dark. David would he'd turn on switches all year round, and if a light doesn't come on, David can get very frustrated. He can take it out on himself, or he can take it out on somebody else that's beside him. He can bite or he can lash out.
And how is he, Catherine? How is he now?
We try and keep things as normal as possible for him. We might suffer, you know, as a result, but we have to keep it normal for him. We keep his routine as normal as possible. Now, he does get respite, thankfully, and they can shower David for me, but I can't do it.
You weren't able to shower him at home?
No, not since the electricity went. He has an electric shower and he has a trolley, you know, that he has to go on, so that wouldn't fit into our bathroom.
And you were saying there, and I cut you off, you actually invested in a generator a few years back because
we did. My brother, which I am unfortunate that he's an electrician, John Higgins in Longford, and he came down, he looked around and he says, Catherine, there's forests growing up all around you and I'd advise you get a generator. And we got on that and he installed it for us, and I'm telling you, we have had used it umpteen times. 4 times we've had to use it since September, and that's for days on end. 7 weeks ago we had to use it, we were out for 7 days. But this has just taken the biscuit 14 days. And we are priority. This is my issue, is we are priority with the ESB. And I haven't got one phone call from anybody from the ESB to see, are we managing or are we not? Or we know your priority, or I don't know.
Catherine, we're actually out of time. I want to say what they said to us when we got on to them about this. They said they appreciate, of course, that these power outages cause significant difficulties for vulnerable customers. We cannot prioritise power restoration to vulnerable customers due to the way in which power is restored on the network. They say, though, that they have been communicating daily with registered medically vulnerable customers, initially through text and then via landline during Storm Éowyn. And they say they've given the numbers 13,000 phone calls and 40,000 texts. You haven't been getting those contacts.
No, never have, no.
Catherine, I'm so sorry to cut you off now, but we are way over time here. Listen, we'll keep in touch with you. Stay, the very best of luck to you and to your son there, David. But we have to go, I'm afraid. Sound today was by Paul Murnock. On research was Audrey Donoghue. Our broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin. Today's programme was produced by Annette Egan. Stand by now for rain.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Cozy up with the new arrivals, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.